here. Then he got up and went out his back door toward his workshop. He came back a few moments later with a tool bag of items and set them out on the table. He washed his hands and then took some antibacterial towelettes to my arm. Then he took my wrist and forearm in square, powerful hands. "This will hurt," he advised me. "Meh," I said. "Lean back against the pull." Then he began pulling with one hand and putting gentle pressure on the upraised bone with the other. It turned out that even the Winter Knight's mantle has limits. Either that or the batteries were low. A dull, bone-deep throb roared up my arm, the same pain you feel just before your limbs go numb while submerged in freezing water, only magnified. I was too tired to scream. Besides, I had it coming. After a minute of pure, awful sensation, Michael exhaled and said, "I think it's back in place. Don't move it." I sat there, panting, unable to respond. Michael wrapped the arm in a few layers of gauze, his hands moving slowly at first, and then, with increasing confidence, old reflexes resurfacing. Then he took the rectangular piece of sheet aluminum he'd brought in from his workshop, gave my arm a cursory glance, and used a pair of pliers and his capable hands to bend it into a U-shape. He slid it over my hand at the knuckles, leaving my thumb and fingers free. The brace framed my arm most of the way to my elbow. He slid it back off and adjusted the angle of the bend slightly before putting it back on. Then he took a heavier bandage and secured the brace to my arm. "How's that?" he asked when he was finished. I tested it very, very gingerly. "I can't twist my wrist. Of course, there's a problem with that." "Oh?" I spoke as lightly as I could. "Yeah, I can't twist my wrist. What if there's some incredibly deadly situation that can only be resolved by me twisting my left wrist? It could happen. In fact, I'm not quite sure how it could not happen now." He sat back, his eyes steady on my face. I dropped the joking tone. "Thank you, Michael," I said. I took a deep breath. There was no point in saying anything else here. It must have been the broken arm talking, telling me it was a good idea to open up to someone. "I should go." I started pushing myself up. Michael took his cane, hooked the handle around my ankle, and calmly jerked my leg out from beneath me. I flopped back into the chair. "Harry," he said thoughtfully, "how many times have I saved your life?" "Bunch," he nodded. "What have I asked you for in return?" "Nothing," I said. "Ever." He nodded again. "That's right." We sat in silence for a long time. Finally, I said very quietly, "I don't know if I'm one of the good guys anymore." I swallowed. He listened. "How can I be?" I asked, "after what I've done." "What have you done?" he asked. It took me another minute to answer. "You know about Mab, what I am now, the deal I made. I also know that you did so intending to use that power to save your daughter's life." "You don't know about Susan," I said. I met his eyes. "I killed her, Michael." I don't know what I looked like, but tears suddenly stood out in his eyes. "Oh, Harry," he looked down. "She turned, didn't she? What happened?" "That son of a bitch, Martin," I said. He set her up. Sold out the family that had Maggie. I think he did it to set me on a collision course with the Red King, maybe hoping to focus the White Council on the war effort a little harder. But he had inside knowledge of the Reds, too. He'd worked for them. Was some kind of double agent or triple agent, I don't know. I don't think he was running a grand scheme to get to one specific moment, but he saw his chance. The Red King was getting set to kill Maggie as part of a ritual bloodline curse. The curse was meant to kill me and other people up my family tree. Michael raised his eyebrows. But the ritual was all loaded up, and Martin saw a chance to wipe out the whole Red Court, all of them. He popped Susan in the face with the knowledge of his treachery, and she just snapped. I shuddered, remembering it. I saw it coming, saw what he was doing. Maybe I could have stopped it, I don't know, but I didn't. And she killed him. Tore his throat out, and she started to change, and...
And you finished the ritual, he said quietly. You killed her. You killed them all.
The youngest vampire in the whole world, I said. Brand new. And they all originated from a single point. The Red King, I guess. Their own curse got every one of them. The whole family.
Every Red Court vampire, Michael said gently, was a killer. Every one of them, at one point, chose to take someone's life to slake their thirst. That's what turned them. That choice.
I'm not shedding tears over the Red Court, I said, contempt in my voice. The fallout from taking them all out at once. I don't know. Maybe I'd wish I could have done it differently, with more planning.
One doesn't destroy an empire built on pain and terror neatly, Michael said, if history is to be any indicator. I smiled bleakly.
It was a little hectic at the time, I said. I just wanted to save Maggie.
May I ask you a question?
Sure.
After she started to turn, how did you subdue Susan?
I sat for a time, trying to remember the moment less clearly.
You didn't, he said gently, did you?
She was turning, but she understood what was happening.
She sacrificed herself, Michael said.
She allowed me to sacrifice her, I snarled with sudden boiling fury. There's a difference.
Yes, Michael said quietly. There's a cost for you in that, a burden to be carried.
I kissed her, I said, and then I cut her throat.
The silence after I said that was profound. Michael got up and put a hand on my shoulder. Harry, he said quietly, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry you were faced with those awful choices.
I never meant, I swallowed. I never meant for all those things to happen. For Susan to get hurt. For Mab's deal to stick. I never meant to keep it.
Real pain touched his eyes.
Ah, he said quietly. I'd wondered about the after.
That was me, I said. I arranged it. I thought if I was gone before Mab had a chance to change me, it would be all right.
You thought, Michael took a slow breath and sat down again. You thought that if you died, it would be all right.
Compared to me becoming Mab's psychotic monster, I asked. Compared to letting the Reds kill my daughter and my grandfather?
Yeah, I regarded that as a win.
Michael put his face in his hands for a moment. He shook his head.
Then he lifted his face and looked up at his ceiling, his expression a mixture of sadness and frustration and pain.
And now I've got this thing inside me, I said. And it pushes me, Michael. It pushes and pushes and pushes me to do things.
He eyed me.
And right now, hell's bells, right now, Mab has me working with Nicodemus Arcleone. If I don't, there's this thing in my head that's going to come popping out of it, kill me, and then go after Maggie.
What?
Exactly, I said. Nicodemus. He's robbing a vault somewhere, and Mab expects me to pay off a debt she owes him. He's formed his own evil league of evil to get it done, and I'm a member. And to make it worse, I dragged Murphy into it with me, and I'm not even telling her everything, because I can't.
Michael shook his head slowly.
I look around me, man. I'm trying to do what I've always done to protect people, to keep them safe from the monsters, only I'm pretty sure I'm one of them. I can't figure out where I could have, what else I might have done.
I swallowed.
I'm lost. I know every step I took to get here, and I'm still lost.
Harry,
and my friends, I said. Even Thomas. I was stuck out on that island of the damned for a year. A year, Michael, and they only showed up a handful of times. Just Murphy and Thomas, maybe half a dozen times in more than a year. It's just a goddamn boat ride away, 40 minutes. People drive farther than that to go to the movies. They know what I'm turning into. They don't want to watch it happening to me.
Harry, Michael said in a low, soft voice. You are
a fool, I said quietly. A monster. Damned. So arrogant, Michael breathed.
I blinked. I mean, I was accustomed to a certain degree of hubris from you, but this is stunning, even on your scale.
What?
I asked. Arrogant, he repeated, enunciating.
To a degree I can scarcely believe.
I just stared at him for a moment.
I'm sorry, he said.
I know you were expecting me to share words of wisdom with you, maybe say something to you about God and your soul and forgiveness and redemption. And all those things are good things that need to be said in the right time, but honestly, Harry, I wouldn't be your friend if I didn't point out to you that you are behaving like an amazingly pig-headed idiot.
I am? I asked a little blankly.
He stared at me for a second, anger and pain on his face, and then they vanished, and he smiled, his eyes flickering as merrily as a Christmas Eve fire. I suddenly realized where Molly got her smile. Something very like laughter bubbled just under the surface of his words.
Yes, Harry, you idiot, you are.
I don't understand, I said. He eyed our beers, which were empty. That tends to happen with Mac's micro-brews. He went to the fridge and opened another pair of bottles with the power of Thor and put one of them in front of me. We clinked and drinked.
Harry, he said after a meditative moment, are you perfect?
No, I said.
He nodded.
Omniscient?
I snorted. No.
Can you go into the past, change things that have already happened?
Theoretically, I asked. He gave me a level stare. I hear that sometimes some things can be done, but apparently it's tricky as hell, and I've got no idea how, I said.
So, can you?
No, I said.
In other words, he said, despite all the things you know and all the incredible things you can do, you're only human.
I frowned at him and swigged beer.
Then why, Michael asked, are you expecting perfection out of yourself? Do you really think you're that much better than the rest of us? That your powers make you a higher quality of human being? That your knowledge places you on a higher plane than everyone else on this world?
I eyed the beer and felt embarrassed.
That's arrogance, Harry, he said gently. On a level so deep you don't even realize it exists. And do you know why it's there?
No, I asked. He smiled again. Because you have set a higher standard for yourself. You think that because you have more power than others, you have to do more with it.
To whom much is given, much is required, I said without looking up. He barked out a short laugh.
For someone who repeatedly tells me he has no faith, you have a surprising capacity to quote scripture. And that's just my point.
I eyed him.
What?
You wouldn't be twisting yourself into knots like this, Harry, if you didn't care.
So?
Monsters don't care, Michael said. The damned don't care, Harry. The only way to go beyond redemption is to choose to take yourself there. The only way to do it is to stop caring.
My view of the kitchen blurred out.
You think?
I'll tell you what I think, Michael said. I think that you aren't perfect, and that means that sometimes you make bad choices. But honestly, I don't know if I would have done any differently if it had been one of my children at risk.
Not you, I said quietly.
You wouldn't have done what I did.
I couldn't have done what you did, Michael said simply. And I haven't had to be standing in your shoes to make those same choices.
He tilted his beer slightly toward the ceiling.
Thank you, God.
So, if you've come here for judgment, Harry, you won't find any for me. I've made mistakes. I've failed. I'm human.
But these mistakes, I said, could change me. I could wind up like these people around Nicodemus.
Michael snorted.
No, you won't.
Why not?
Because I know you, Harry Dresden, Michael said. You are pathologically incapable of knowing when to quit. You don't surrender. And I don't believe for a second that you actually intend to help Nicodemus do whatever it is he's doing.
I felt a smile tug at one corner of my mouth.
Ha! Michael said, sitting back in his chair. He swallowed some more beer.
I thought so. It's tricky, I said. I've got to help him get whatever he's after, technically. Michael wrinkled his nose. Fairies. I never understood why they're such lawyers about everything. I'm the Winter Knight, I said, and I don't get it either.
I find that oddly reassuring, Michael said. I barked out a short laugh.
Yeah, maybe so. His face grew more serious. Nicodemus knows treachery like fish know water, he said. He surely knows the direction of your intent. He's smart, Harry. He's got centuries of survival behind him.
True, I said. On the other hand, I'm not exactly a useless cream puff.
His eyes glinted. Also true, he said.
And Murphy's there, I said.
Good, Michael said, rapping the bottle on the table for emphasis. That woman's got brains and heart.
I chewed on my lip and looked up at him.
But, Michael, she wasn't... For the past year... He sighed and shook his head. Harry, do you know what that island is like for the rest of us?
I shook my head.
The last time I was there, I was shot twice, he said. I was in intensive care for a month. I was in bed for 4 months. I didn't walk again for nearly a year. There was permanent damage to my hip and lower back, and physically, it was the single most extended, horribly painful, grindingly humiliating experience of my life.
Yeah, I said.
And, he said, when I have nightmares of it, you know what I dream about?
What?
The island, Michael said. The presence of it. The malevolence there. He shuddered. Michael, Knight of the Cross, who had faced deadly spirits and demons and monsters without flinching, shivered in fear.
That place is horrible, he said quietly. The effect it has.
It's obvious that it doesn't even touch you. But I don't know if I could go back there again by choice.
I blinked.
But I know Molly went back there, and you tell me Karen did, too, and Thomas, many times. He shook his head. That's astounding to me, Harry.
They never said anything, I said. I mean, they never spent the night either, but...
Of course they didn't, he said. You already beat yourself up for enough things that aren't your fault. People who care don't want to add to that. He paused and then added gently, But you assumed it was about you.
I finished the beer and sighed.
Arrogance, I said. I feel stupid.
Good, Michael said.
It's good for everyone to feel that way sometimes. It helps remind you how much you still have to learn.
What he said about the island tracked.
I remembered my first moments there, how unsettling it was. I had talent and training in defending myself against psychic assault, and I'd shielded against it on pure reflex, shedding the worst that it could have done to me. Wizard. And not long after that, I'd taken on demon reach in a ritual challenge that had left me the warden of the place and exempt from its malice. Thomas hadn't had the kind of training, the kind of defenses I did. Molly, who was more sensitive than me to that kind of energy, must have found it agonizing. And Karen, who had been assaulted psychically before. Damn. They'd all picked up more scars from me, on my behalf, without a word of complaint. And I'd been upset because they hadn't been willing to take more. Michael was right. I'd gotten completely focused on myself. It occurs to me, I said, if I wasn't being the Winter Knight, Mab would have picked another thug. Mab had even told me who she would have gone after, my brother, Thomas. I shuddered to think what might have happened if the temptations of Winter had been added to those he already bore. Someone else would be bearing this burden. Maybe someone it would have destroyed by now.
It occurred to you just now? Michael asked.
I thought of it about 5 seconds after I heard about it.
I laughed, and it felt really good to do it.
There, Michael said, nodding.
Thank you.
I meant it for a lot of things. Michael got it.
He inclined his head to me.
There is, of course, an elephant in the room, of which we have not spoken.
Of course there was. Maggie.
I don't want to make her into a target again, I said. Michael sighed patiently. Harry, he said, as if speaking to a rather slow child, I'm not sure if you noticed this, but things did not turn out well for the last monster who raised his hand against your child, or any of his friends, or associates, or anyone who worked for him, or for most of the people he knew. I blinked. Whether or not that was your intention, Michael said, you did establish a rather effective precedental message to the various predators, should they ever learn of her relationship to you. Do you think Nicodemus would hesitate, I asked, even for a second? To take her from this house? Michael asked. He smiled. I'd love to see him try it. I lifted my eyebrows. 12 angels protect this house still, Michael said. Part of my retirement package. She's not always in the house, I said. And when she isn't, Mouse is with her, he said. We got him attached to her as a medical assist dog. He prevents her from having panic attacks. I made a choking sound, imagining Mouse in a grade school. By making everyone else around her panic instead? He's a perfect gentleman, Michael said, amused. The children love him. The teachers let the best students play with him on recess. I imagined my enormous moose of a dog on a playground, trotting around after Maggie and other kids with that dopey doggy grin on his face, cheerfully going along with whatever the kids seemed to have planned, moving with tremendous care around them, and shamelessly cadging tummy rubs whenever possible. That's kind of awesome, I said. Children frequently are, Michael said. I chewed on my lips some more. What if... Michael, she was there. She was in the temple when... I looked up. What if she remembers what I did? She doesn't remember any of it, Michael said. Now, I said. Stuff like that. It has a way of popping up again. If it does, he said, don't you think she deserves to know the truth? All of it? When she's ready. I looked away. The things I do. I don't want any of it to splash on her. I didn't want it to touch my children either, Michael said. Mostly it didn't, and I don't regret my choices. I did everything in my power to protect them. I'm content with that. My boss has a few differences in policy compared to yours. True that. I need to get moving, I said. Seriously, I'm on the clock. We aren't done talking about Maggie, he replied firmly, but we'll take it up soon. Why? I asked. She's safe here. She's happy? Mostly, he said amiably. She's your daughter, Harry. She needs you. But not, I think, nearly as much as you need her. I don't know how you can say that to me, I said, after Molly. He tilted his head. What about Molly? You know about Molly, right? I asked. He blinked at me. She's been doing great lately. I saw her last weekend. Did she lose her apartment or something? I looked back at him in dismay, realizing he didn't know. Michael didn't know that his daughter had become the Winter Lady. She hadn't told him. Harry, he said, worried, is she all right? Oh, hell's freaking bells. She hadn't told her parents. That was so Molly. Unimpressed by a legion of wicked fairies, terrified to tell her parents about her new career. But it was her choice, and I didn't have the right to unmake it for her. She's fine, I blurted. She's fine. I meant, Michael said, a look of understanding coming over his face. Oh, right. Well, that's fine. Behind us now, and it all worked out. I wasn't sure what he was talking about, but it was getting me out of making a major problem for Molly. I rolled with it. Right, I said. Anyway, thank you again for too much. If it's ever too much, he said, I'll thump you politely on the head. You'll have to for it to get through, I said. I know. He rose and offered me his hand. I shook it. Michael, I asked, do you ever miss it? His smile lines deepened. The fight? He shrugged. I'm very, very happy to have the time to spend with my wife and children. I narrowed my eyes. That wasn't exactly an answer. He winked at me. Then he walked me to the door, leaning on his cane. By the time I got to the car, the icy ache in my arm had dulled down to a buzzing sensation. I was recovering. I'd get some anti-inflammatories into me before I got back to help with the swelling. No, I couldn't feel the pain, but that didn't mean that it wouldn't be smart to do whatever I could to take the pressure off the mantle, to save my strength for when it counted. I needed to pick up some other things, too, thinking along the same lines. Whatever Nicodemus had planned, it would go down in the next 24 hours, and I was going to be ready for it. Chapter 21. I rolled back up to the slaughterhouse just before the rented town car's transmission gave out on me altogether. It sort of cheered me up, actually. I hadn't wrecked a car with my wizardliness in a long time. And it just couldn't have happened to a nicer guy's rental vehicle. For a moment, I felt a sudden sharp pining for my old Volkswagen, which made about as much sense as anything I'd been doing that day. The Blue Beetle had been uncomfortable and cramped, and it had smelled a bit odd, not to mention that it was put together from the cannibalized scraps of a bunch of other late-60s VWs, and I must have looked absolutely ridiculous, crouched behind its wheel. But it had been my car, and while it hadn't run like a race car, it did run, most of the time. Suck it, rental town car. The built-in talking GPS computer hadn't lasted two blocks. Jordan, I boomed as I came in. I tossed a paper bag with a couple of cheeseburgers in it at the Denarian Squire. Chow down, buddy. They're hot, so don't let the cheese burn your tongue. Oh, right, sorry. Jordan scowled at me and fumbled with the bag and his shotgun until he managed to balance the two. I clapped him on the shoulder in a genial fashion and rolled on by. I pointed at the guard at the next post and said, "You don't get cheeseburgers. You didn't say nice things to me like Jordan did." The guard glowered at me in silence, of course. It was an act. No one could resist my bluff and manly charisma. In his heart of hearts, he wanted to be friends with me. I just know it. As I descended to the floor of the slaughterhouse, Karen looked up from a long work table absolutely covered in guns. She tracked my entrance, her expression touched with both wariness and a certain amount of incredulity. "Harry?" she asked as I came down the last few steps. "Who else would I be?" I asked. "Except that jerk Gray, except he's too busy being Harvey to be me." I took another paper bag from Burger King and plopped it down in front of Karen, then dumped the loaded duffel I'd picked up from a military surplus store off where it hung over my shoulder. "Figured you might be hungry." She eyed the fast food bag. "I'm not sure I'm that hungry." Whoa, hold on there, Annie Oakley. You did not just say that," I said. "Not right to my face." A slow smile spread over her mouth and reached her eyes. "Harry." I exhaled. The talk with Michael had made me feel about 20 tons lighter, at least on the inside. "Yeah, I guess maybe it is." I felt my own smile fade. "Harvey's dead." Her face sobered and her eyes raked over me, stopping on my arm. "What happened?" "Polonius Lartessa showed up with a squad of soldier ghouls and whacked him," I said. "Unless maybe it was Deirdre who did it, or Gray. I had ghouls all over my face when it happened."
"Who took care of your arm for you?"
"A good man," I said. She stared at me for a moment and then her eyebrows lifted. "Oh," she said. Her eyes glittered.
"Oh, that explains some things then."
"Yeah," I said, bouncing my weight lightly on my toes. "The point being, someone's trying to screw with the job before we even get going."
"What a crime," Karen said. I grunted.
"If Tessa's trying to stop Nicodemus, I've got to wonder why."
"She's married to him?" she suggested dryly.
"That's vengeance worthy, all right," I said. "But I don't know. I hate working in the dark."
"So, what's the move?"
I chewed my lip and said, "Nothing's changed for us except..."
"Except what?" she asked.
"Except someone's going down for Harvey before this is done," I said.
"Yeah," she said, "I can get behind that."
I took a long look at the table.
"Uzis," I noted. "They're a classic," Karen said. "Simple, reliable, durable, and not assault rifles."
That was good for the innocent bystanders of Chicago. Pistol ammunition wasn't nearly as good at flying through an extraneous wall or 10 and killing some poor sap sitting in his apartment two blocks away.
Which wasn't to say that they weren't insanely dangerous, just less so than a bunch of AK-47s would have been. Nicodemus wasn't doing that to be thoughtful. Either he bought what was available, or else he had a reason to cause only limited collateral damage.
Can Binder's goons handle them? She asked.
I assume so, I said. They seemed to take to guns pretty easily the last time. Check with Binder on it.
Check with Binder on what?
Asked Binder, appearing from farther down the factory floor. He was carrying a sandwich in one hand, a cup of what might have been tea in the other. Speak of the devil and he appears, I said. Binder sketched me a courtly little bow, rolling his sandwich as he did.
Your people, Karen said. Do they know how to handle an Uzi, or do they need some kind of orientation?
They'll be fine, he said, his tone confident, even cocky. Don't ask them to field strip and repair one, or for witty banter before the shoot, but for trigger work or reloading, they're golden.
His sharp, beady little eyes landed on my arm in its splint.
Does someone not know how to play well with others?
His eyes went from me to start flicking around the slaughterhouse. I could see all the calculation going on in his head. One Harry, no Deirdre, no Gray.
They're fine, I said. We ran into some opposition around the accountant.
Bookmark, Binder said, holding up two fingers.
He turned and retreated, wolfing down his sandwich, and returned a moment later with Hannah Asher in tow. Asher had ditched her sweater in favor of a tank top, and she looked as if she'd just come off a treadmill. She was breathing lightly, and her skin was sheened with sweat. There were bits of ash stuck in the fine hairs of her forearms and smudging one cheek. Like every other look I'd seen on her, it was an awfully intriguing one, easily translated to let a fellow imagine what she might look like during...
Right then, Binder said. Resume.
We staked out the accountant, I said. Nicodemus's wife showed up with a crew of ghouls and went after him. The accountant was killed.
The wife did it?
Asher asked.
Women, Binder said scornfully.
Karen and Asher both eyed him. He folded his arms.
I'm a century older than any of you sprats, he said. I'll stand by that.
I'm pretty sure I didn't kill Harvey, I said. My gut says it wasn't Gray. Other than that, your guess is as good as mine.
Uh-huh,
Binder said, nodding toward me conspiratorially.
Women.
Karen gave me a very level look. I coughed. The female of the species is deadlier than the male? She snorted and picked up the next Uzi in the row.
I don't understand. Why would Nicodemus's wife be trying to sabotage him? Asher asked.
Maybe she wants to cop the job, Binder said wistfully. Lot of money.
Nah, I said. Money isn't her thing.
Afraid you'd say that, he said. Personal.
Let's just say that dysfunctional doesn't even come close to that family.
Bloody hell, Binder said. Why does everyone have to get bloody personal? No bloody professional pride anymore, he glowered at me. Present bloody company included.
Language,
Asher said, wincing.
Sod off, he said. Where's Deirdre and Gray?
Gray's doubling the accountant, I said. No clue about Deirdre. Binder made a growling sound.
Hey, Asher said. Has anyone else been keeping track of how many goats are in the pen?
8, said Karen and Binder together. I did a rough calculation. It's eating 1 goat at every meal. That got me a round of looks. I shrugged. Something's here. It stands to reason. Asher and Binder both looked around the factory floor. Asher folded her arms as if she'd suddenly become cold.
Big, Karen noted calmly, if it eats that much.
Yeah, I said.
And quiet.
Yep.
And really, really fast.
Binder shook his head.
Bloody hell.
What is it? Asher said.
Could be a lot of things, Binder said. None of them good.
He squinted at me. Muscle, you think?
Maybe where we're going, we need something with that kind of physical power, I said. Asher scowled.
Or maybe it's there to clean us up after the job.
We wouldn't have been given a chance to become aware of it if that was the case, Karen said.
Unless that's what Nicodemus wants us to think, Binder said.
Us.
I like the sound of that. The more people I could incline against pitching in on Nicodemus's side when it all hit the fan, the better.
Let's not go down that rabbit hole, I said. We've got problems enough without adding in paranoia.
Too right, Binder said. Job worth 20 million each, with an invisible monster nipping about the place, and a psychotic ex trying to bugger us out of tweaking the nose of a bloody Greek god. What have we got to be paranoid about?
Look, I said. At the best, it means Nicodemus isn't telling us everything.
We knew that already, Asher said.
I shrugged a shoulder in acknowledgement of that. At worst, it means someone on the inside is giving information to some kind of opposition.
Asher narrowed her eyes.
That's rich, coming from the opposition. I waved a hand. At this point, I'm playing the game. I'll get in and out again, because if I don't, Mab is going to have my head. Well, technically she'd have the splattered pieces, but they didn't need the details. I'm not looking to derail the train before then.
Asher looked skeptical. Binder looked pensive. Karen finished her inspection of the next Uzi and picked up another one.
Ash, my girl, Binder said and jerked his head toward the other end of the factory floor.
She nodded and the two of them moved off, walking close and speaking quietly. Karen watched them go and then asked me,
What do you think they're talking about?
Same as us, I said, wondering when someone's going to pull the rug out from underneath them and how they're going to get out of it in one piece.
Or maybe thinking about doing a little pulling themselves, she said.
Or maybe that, I said. But they won't do it until after they've got their packs loaded with jewels.
How do you figure?
Binder, I said. He's a mercenary, plain and simple.
Unless that's what he wants us to think, Karen said.
Unless that, I said. I exhaled slowly. This whole thing, I said, is going to come down to guessing who isn't what they look like.
Who is? Karen asked, her hands moving surely over the weapon.
Ever.
Point, I said.
But it's going to be about guessing motivations. Whoever's done a better job of figuring out what the other wants wins.
Her mouth quivered at the corners.
Then we might be in trouble, because your motivations have never exactly been mysterious, Harry.
Not to you, I said. To someone like Nicodemus, I must seem like an utter lunatic.
Karen let out a short laugh.
You know what? I think you're probably right.
She manually cycled the action of the Uzi, caught the round as it was ejected, then put the weapon down and nodded.
That's it, 40 of them.
I grunted. Didn't some biblical guy have 40 soldiers to take on an army or something?
Gideon, he had 300.
I thought that was the Spartans.
It was also the Spartans, Karen said.
Except that they had about 4,000 other Greeks there with them, in addition to their 300.
300 makes a better movie.
Who had 40 guys, then?
You're thinking about how many days and nights it rained on Noah's Ark.
Oh, I said. I was sure somebody had 40 guys.
Ali Baba?
He didn't have 40 guys, I said. He ripped off 40 guys.
Maybe you're remembering cartoons again, Karen said.
Probably, I said. I stared down at the guns. 40 of those demon suit guys with Uzis.
She grimaced.
Yeah, gonna take me maybe 3 hours just to load all the clips.
What kind of target is tough enough that it needs 40 demon soldiers with submachine guns to assault?
Karen shook her head.
Military installation?
I grunted.
You don't plan for this many guns if you don't intend to use them, Karen said. If it comes down to Binder's goons shooting people...
We sure as hell don't stand around and watch it happen, I assured her.
She nodded.
Good.
She twisted her mouth in distaste.
Won't that upset Mab if you bail out?
Her royal freeze-poppiness can get upset, but if she claims to be surprised, I'll laugh in her face.
But it could mean she kills you, she said quietly.
Could mean she tries, I said, aiming for cocky and confident.
Karen looked away, the motion a little too sharp.
She didn't go so far as to need to blink tears from her eyes or anything, but for a moment she looked about 10 years older. She nodded. It looked like she wanted to say something.
Karen?
I asked.
She shook her head once and said, I've got to get these clips loaded.
Want help?
Sure.
We set to the task of loading 120 32-round magazines with 9mm rounds. 3,800 bullets or so. Even with speed-loading tools, it took a while, and we worked in companionable silence, broken occasionally by the passing guard or an increasingly gentle, intermittent series of whooping sounds that came from the far end of the factory floor, Asher, presumably, practicing her breaching spell. Just as we were finishing up, boot steps came from the opposite direction, and I looked up to see Nicodemus marching toward us, a pair of his squires tromping along behind him. Deirdre walked beside him in her human form, her expression unfriendly and otherwise unreadable.
"Weapons ready?" he asked Karen without stopping.
"All set."
"Excellent. Conference table, please."
"Why?" I asked. My left hand hadn't been good for much beyond holding the magazine as I loaded rounds, and the fingertips of my right hand felt raw. Nicodemus went on by and glanced over his shoulder at me, his eyes lingering on my splint.
"Gray is back. It's time to talk about our target."
Chapter 22. We gathered at the conference table again, and Anna Valmont slid into the seat beside me.
"Hey," I said, "how goes the grease job?"
She eyed me and smiled faintly.
"I am in this crew what is known as a grease man. A grease man is the person who can get you into some place you otherwise couldn't get into by yourself."
Her voice turned wry.
"A grease job is something else."
"Right," I said, narrowing my eyes, nodding. "Got it. So how goes the man greasing?" Valmont let out a shallow chuckle.
"Got to admit, I wouldn't mind being the first to take on one of those Fenucci monsters and win."
"Can you?" She nodded slowly.
"I think it's possible."
Gray sauntered in, looking exactly as he had that morning, and sat down at the table.
"Order, please," Nicodemus said, as Gray sat down next to Deirdre. "We'll make this quick, and then break for a meal, if that's all right with everyone."
"All right with me," Asher drawled. She looked sweatier and more smudged than she had a few hours before, but her expression was unmistakably smug.
"I'm ravenous."
"I know just what you mean," Nicodemus said. "Deirdre?"
Once more, Deirdre circled the table with folders that were labeled simply "Goal."
"I've been meaning to ask," I said. "Does this master plan of yours come with health coverage?"
"Dresden," Nicodemus said.
"Because that kind of thing is getting to be more and more important. I mean, I know the government probably means well and all, but those people, honestly."
Nicodemus eyed me. "Life insurance seems like something that would be worthwhile, too." I looked up at Asher and winked. "Maybe we should strike until we get a whole life policy." Asher flashed me a quick grin and said,
"I've always thought that insurance was more or less betting against myself."
"Nah," Binder said. "In my experience, you're just playing the odds." "Children," Nicodemus said with a sigh, "shall we focus on the matter at hand?"
"But I haven't even had the chance to dip Deirdre's pigtails in my inkwell," I said.
Deirdre glowered at me, her eyes glinting. "Fine," I said, and subsided.
"Each of you," Nicodemus said, "brings something to the table that we need in order to reach our final destination. The manor of the Lord of the Underworld, Vault 7.
"You mean Hay?"
"Shall we not speak his name for the next 24 hours or so, please, Mr. Dresden?" Nicodemus said in a pained tone. "Unless you prefer him to be ready and waiting for all of us, including yourself. Granted, the likelihood of him taking notice of any one of us in particular is vanishing small, but it seems prudent to take a few simple steps."
"Whatever," I said. I thought he was being pretty fussy. What with books and movies using him as a character and mythology courses being taught all over the world, I figured Hades got to hear his name spoken in one form or another, tens if not hundreds of thousands of times every day. Each utterance of a powerful supernatural being's name is kind of like sending him a page, a ping for his attention. If I could have a phone that survived longer than an hour, and it tried to get my attention 10,000 times a day, I'd throw the damn thing into a hole. The big supernatural beings, especially the very human-like Greek gods, probably reacted in much the same way. Odds were good that I could sit chatting for an hour or two and mention his name several times, yet he wouldn't even notice my relative handful of pings among all the others.
It took a deliberate and rhythmic repetition, usually at least 3 times, to really get a signal through the noise. But, on the other hand, there was always the chance that Hades just might feel my utterance of his name and randomly decide to take a moment to pay attention. That probably wouldn't be good. So, despite giving Nicodemus lip, I shut up. "Once we gain entry to the underworld vault," Nicodemus began, I held up my hand and said, "Question?" Nicodemus's left eye began to twitch. I didn't wait for him to respond. "You're planning on just jumping straight to the vault? Hell, not even Hercules could do that. It was kind of a journey to get in. There was a bit with the dog and everything. Do you really think we're going to just hop right past all of the defenses around the realm of the king of the underworld?" That got everyone's attention, even Gray's. They all looked at Nicodemus, interested in the answer. "Yes," Nicodemus said in a flat tone. "Oh," I said, "just like that, huh?" "Once we're inside the vault," Nicodemus said, as if my question was not interesting enough to waste more time on, "there will be 3 gates between us and our goal. The gate of fire, the gate of ice, and the gate of blood." "Fun," I said. "Obviously," Nicodemus said, "Asher was chosen for her capability with fire. As the Winter Knight, you, Dresden, will obviously handle the gate of ice." "Right," I said, "obviously. What about the gate of blood?" Nicodemus smiled pleasantly. "Of course. Old Nick had probably spilled more blood than the rest of us in the room together, if you didn't count Deirdre. Exactly what does each of these gates entail?"
"If I knew that," Nicodemus said, "I'd not have bothered recruiting experts. Each of us will take point on our specific gate, with the rest of the team backing whatever play they decide is important. Once we're through, we'll be in the vault. It's quite large. You'll have a few minutes to gather whatever it is you feel you need to take with you. After that time, I'm leaving. Anyone who lags behind is on his or her own."
I held up my hand again and didn't bother waiting for a response. "What are you after?"
"Excuse me?" Nicodemus asked.
"You," I said. "Vault 7 is awfully specific. And you don't care much about money, so I have to wonder what's in there that you're so interested in."
"That's hardly your concern," Nicodemus said.
I snorted. "The hell it isn't. We're all sticking our necks out. And if things don't go well, we might have an angry god on our tails. I want to know what's worth that, other than the 20 million. After all, a lot of things could go wrong. Maybe you wind up dead, purely by someone else's hand on the way in. Maybe I want to grab that what's it for myself." There was a mutter of agreement from Binder and nods from Karen and Valmont. Even Asher looked curious. Gray pursed his lips thoughtfully.
"Should I fall, the rest of you will already be dead," Nicodemus said calmly.
"Indulge me," I said.
"This deal is already starting to stink. A reasonable person might walk based purely on what happened today." That brought a low round of mutters, and Valmont asked,
"What happened today?"
I told her about Tessa and her ghouls and Deirdre and Harvey. That made Valmont's lips compress into a line. She knew better than most what was left when a Denarian tore into a mortal, and 2 out of 3 possible suspects were Knights of the Coin.
"That has no bearing on our mission," Nicodemus said.
"The hell it doesn't," I said. "I don't know about the rest of you, but the last thing we need is his crazy ex jumping into things on some kind of vengeance kick."
"It's not about that," Nicodemus said.
"Then what is it about?" I asked. "I dealt with the White Council my whole life, so I'm used to being treated like a mushroom."
"Huh?"
Asher asked. "Kept in the dark and fed bullshit," Binder reported calmly.
"Ah.
But this is going beyond the pale, even for me. You ask us to trust you about the plan to get into what should be an impenetrable vault. You ask us to trust you that our share will be waiting next to whatever it is you want. You ask us to trust you and believe that Tessa isn't on some kind of jihad that will get us all killed, but won't tell us what it's about." I looked around the table at my criminal confederates.
"Trust is kind of a two-way street, Nicodemus. It's time to give something."
"Or you'll do what, precisely?"
Or maybe we'll all walk away from a bunch of empty promises without a sliver of proof to back them up, I said.
Nicodemus narrowed his eyes. Dresden and his woman are obviously in accord, he said.
Karen scowled. Nicodemus ignored her.
What about the rest of you?
What he said,
Belmont said quietly. Asher folded her arms, frowning. Binder sighed.
20 million quid. Think, girl.
We can't spend it if we're dead from sticking our heads into a hole and getting them whacked off, Asher said firmly.
Nicodemus nodded. Gray?
Gray tented his fingertips in front of his lips for a moment and then said,
The personal aspect of this interference troubles me. A job of this sort requires pure professionalism, detachment.
Binder made a nonverbal sound of agreement with Gray's statements.
I will not walk away from a job once I've agreed to it. You know how I operate, Nicodemus, Gray continued. But I would sympathize if another professional of less ability and less rigid standards did so.
Nicodemus regarded Gray thoughtfully for a moment.
Your professional recommendation?
The wizard has a point, Gray said. He's an annoying, headstrong ass, but he isn't stupid. It would not be foolish for you to invest some measure of trust to balance what you ask for.
Nicodemus mused over that for a moment and then nodded his head.
One ought not hire an expert and then ignore his opinion, he said.
Then he turned to the rest of us.
Vault 7 contains, in addition to a standard division of gold and jewels, a number of Western religious icons. It is my intention to retrieve a cup from the vault.
A what? Binder asked.
A cup, Nicodemus replied.
All this, Binder said, for a cup. Nicodemus nodded.
A simple ceramic cup, something like a teacup, but lacking any handle, quite old.
My mouth fell open, and I made a choking sound at approximately the same time. Gray pursed his lips and let out a slow whistle.
Wait, Asher said. Are you talking about what I think you're talking about?
Jesus, Mary and Joseph, Karen said quietly. Nicodemus made a face in her direction.
Miss Murphy, please.
She gave Nicodemus a small, unpleasant smile. Binder clued in a second later.
The bloody Holy Grail? Is he bloody kidding?
Valmont turned to me, frowning.
That's real?
It's real, I said, but it was lost more than 1,000 years ago.
Not lost, Nicodemus corrected me calmly. It was collected.
The cup that caught the blood of Christ, Gray mused. He eyed Nicodemus. Now, what possible use could you have for that old thing?
Sentimental value, Nicodemus said with a guileless smile and straightened the skinny strands of his gray tie. I'm something of a collector of such artifacts myself.
The tie wasn't a tie, unless you meant it in a very literal sense. It was a length of simple old rope tied into the noose, the one that Judas used to hang himself after betraying Christ, if I understood it correctly. It made Nicodemus all but unkillable. I didn't know if anyone else in the world knew what I knew, that the noose didn't protect him from itself. I'd nearly strangled him with it the last time we'd crossed trails, hence his roughened voice. Gray didn't look like he believed Nicodemus's answer, but that hadn't stopped him from being satisfied with it. He looked around the room and said,
Yeah, you know more than you did. Is it enough?
Tessa, I said. What's her beef with you going after the Grail? She wants it for herself, of course, Nicodemus said. I'll deal with Tessa before we launch. It won't become an issue for the job. You have my personal guarantee.
Gray spread his hands.
There, he said. That's good enough for me, Binder.
The stocky little guy screwed up his eyes in thought and nodded slowly.
Ash?
All right, Asher said. Sure, that's enough for me, for now.
But, I began.
Asher rolled her eyes.
Oh, don't be such a whiny little... She turned to Binder. Git?
Git, he confirmed.
Don't be such a whiny little git, Dresden, Asher said. I'm hungry. The more I could force Nicodemus to bend, the more of his authority would drain away from him. The more someone else defended him, the more he would stockpile. Time to try another angle.
And you aren't the only thing in here that is, I said to Asher, and pointed at the goat pen. Before I go anywhere else, I want to know what's been picking off the livestock.
Ah, Nicodemus said, that.
Yeah, that.
Does it matter?
I glowered at him.
It kind of does, I said. Then thoughtfully, I raised my voice to carry a little farther.
Whatever big, ugly, stinking, stupid thing you've got hanging around in here with us probably doesn't deserve to be in this company. Given our goal, I don't see the point in taking along a mindless mound of muscle.
Gray winced. I felt it almost at once. The hairs on the back of my neck suddenly started trying to crawl up onto my scalp. Part of me kicked into a genuine watery-bellied fear reaction, something purely instinctive, a message from my primitive hindbrain. A large predator was staring at me with intent.
Yeah, got your attention now, I muttered under my breath.
I raised my voice to address Nicodemus.
Point is, Gray's right. It's time to share some details. So, who is the last guy on the crew?
I certainly never meant to frighten anyone, Nicodemus said. But I suppose I don't have the same point of view as you children. I can understand your apprehension.
Bull. He'd known exactly what he was doing, setting out the goats and letting us get the idea in our heads. From the start, he wanted us to know that he had something big and bad and dangerous hiding in reserve.
If you don't mind, Nicodemus said to the room at large, I think introductions are in order.
The nape of my neck was trying to slither away and find a good place to hide when the smell hit me first. It was thick and pungent, bestial, the smell of a large animal in the immediate proximity. A few seconds later, the goats started panicking in their pen, running back and forth and bleating to one another in terror.
What the hell?
Valmont breathed, looking around uneasily.
I didn't join her in rubbernecking. I was extending my awareness, my wizard's senses, searching for the subtle vibration of magical energies at work in the air. I'd never been able to throw up a magical veil so good that it could mask odor, but just because I couldn't do it didn't mean that it was impossible. The one huge weakness of veiling magic was that it was still magic. If your senses were sharp and you were reasonably sure a veil was present, you could find that source of magical energy if you looked hard enough. I found it, after a moment's intense concentration, about 10 feet directly behind me. I turned, kind of casually, in my chair, folded my arms, fixed my gaze on the empty space where I felt the energy was coming from, and waited, trying to look bored. It faded into sight, slowly, an utterly motionless figure. It was human in general shape, but only generally. Muscle covered it in ropey layers and in densities that were too oddly proportioned to be human. So much muscle that you could see its outlines through a thick layer of grayish, straggly hair that covered its body. It was well over 9 feet tall. Massive shoulders sloped up to a tree trunk-sized neck, and its head was shaped strangely as well, sloping up more sharply than a human skull, with a wide forehead and a brow ridge like a mountain crag. Eyes glittered way back in the shadows beneath that brow, glinting like an assassin's knives from a cave's mouth. Its features were heavy and brutish, its hands and feet absolutely enormous, and I had met the creatures like before.
Stars and stones, I breathed.
That massive brow gathered, lowered. For a second I thought there had been distant thunder outside, and then I realized that the nearly subsonic rumbling sound was coming from the thing's chest. It was growling at me. I swallowed.
This, Nicodemus said into the startled silence, is the Genosqua. He, of course, knows you all, having been the first to arrive.
Big one, isn't he?
Binder said in a very mild voice. What's his job? I share Dresden's concerns about the availability of our target's vault, Nicodemus said. There have, in the past, been rather epic guardians protecting the ways in and out of this particular domain. The Genosqua has consented to join us in order to serve as a counterweight, should any such protection arise.
An ogre? Asher asked. Not an ogre, I replied.